Mitzvah Kuf Chaf Aleph, the 121st mitzvah. Mitzvah's Korban Chatas Liyochid Shezhagav Mitzvah's Losase Shechayavin Alea Koris. The regular 121, the regular run-of-the-mill mitzvah, as opposed to the previous one, where the special case of the Sanhedrin that made a mistake about a mitzvah that has Koris involved, where one individual simply makes a mistake and performs a prohibition that carries with it the penalty of Koris, of spiritual excision. So in that case, he has to bring a certain sacrifice to atone for the sin if he does it by mistake. Sheyakriv kol shogeg b'cheid mechatoim hagedolim hayeduim korban chatos. Everybody who makes a mistake and does a sin, one of the great sins, the known sins, has to bring a korban chatos, a special sacrifice known as a chatos, a sin offering, colloquially called, not colloquially, or traditionally called in English, or although perhaps a purification offering is more appropriate.
Sin offering.
Because the shoresh ches tes aleph means to sin in the kal, in binyan kal, but in the pl, when you have a dagesh in the middle, root letter or the equivalent, then it means to purify. So either it means a sin offering or a purification offering.
The hersh chumash, that which purifies one from sin.
You know. Okay,
that's
sounds
it.
Good.
That's it.
Sounds good to me. Shenemar v'im nefesh achas techata bishkagami am haaretz. One of the people of the nation who sins accidentally. Bezosin hanikreis chatos kivua. It's also called a set chatos, a fixed chatos. Kilomar shi laolam korban behema velo yala v'yere lefi osher hamakri v'onyo. That it is always an animal, a she-goat or a sheep, female sheep, and the price does not change based on how rich or poor you are. Rather, everyone who performs such a sin has to bring the same type of offering, as opposed to what we'll learn about two mitzvahs from now, which is a special chatos for certain sins, which change depending on how much you can afford. If you want to know what thing you have to do in order to have to bring a chatos, means that if you did it on purpose, you would be liable to kari, spiritual excision. If you do it accidentally, then you're chayav, then you have to bring a korban. Uvitnai shiyah mitzvahs lo saseh, it has to be a negative commandment, as opposed to a certain mitzvah, which we'll learn about in a minute. V'yeh b'maiseh, and has his action associated with it, as opposed to another mitzvah, which we'll learn about in a minute. Which are chayav karis, but you don't have to bring a chatos because they don't conform to these qualifications. Kvar amarnu ki mishor she'akorban lahashbil hanefesh hachotes. The point of korbanos is to have you internalize how lowly you are and make sure and to know how, since you're so lowly, you just really your whole purpose is to serve God and you won't sin anymore. Kechatos ka'osham torah achas lohem. So the korban of the chatos and the korban called the osham, which are brought for other different types of sins. Then the purpose is really the same, to get this message across to you so you stop sinning in the future. And any tzorich lachazir al kol echad be'echad, I'm not going to repeat myself so many times. Midinei ha-mitzvah, what are the halachos of this mitzvah? Kigon ma'sha'amru zichronim livracha, she'en chiyuv ha-shogig lo'havichatas el al-vera shachayovin al-zdona karis. We, as he said before, that only if you did it on purpose that you'd be liable to karis, you have to bring a chatas. There are three mitzvahs that if you do it, violate them on purpose, then you are liable to karis. But if you do it accidentally, then you don't have to bring a chatas. So what are they? Elohein, migadef, a blasphemer, because there's no maisa, there's no action, it's just a speech. Umevatel mila, if you neglected to perform the mitzvah of circumcision, and of course this is not referring to the father who neglects to perform the mitzvah of circumcision on his son, even though that's ideally how the mitzvah is supposed to be performed, but it's talking about the person himself. I can't be politically correct here and say him or herself, because it doesn't apply. So the person himself who neglects to have himself circumcised and dies at the point. I mean, it's a machlokes ram between the Rambam and the Ravid, exactly under what circumstances the person is chayav karis. But if you neglect to perform the mitzvah of circumcision, have it done on yourself, then you are chayav karis, but you don't have to bring a chatos. The chadal ne'asos ha-pesach, and if you don't go to perform the korban pesach, then you are chayav karis, but you don't have to bring a chatos for your failure to do so. V'nasnush tam l'cholecha, we explained the reasoning already. Either it's not a negative commandment, or it doesn't have a maisa. U'mefarish b'mekombo, each is explained in its proper place. Kol shar ha'avera shezdon an kares, any other sin which is liable to kares when you do it on purpose, shigiyos al chatos kua, if you do it accidentally, you have to bring a set fixed chatos, chutz mi tamei sh'achales ha'kodesh, that somebody who's impure, ritually impure, who ate holy things, parts of korbanos, v'tamei shenichnas lamikdash, and somebody who's ritually impure who goes into the temple, sh'afal pi shezdon an kares, ein mevin chatos kua el korban olev yored. So they have to bring a chatos whose price fluctuates as opposed to a set chatos, as we'll learn about in two mitzvahs from now. Shehu ofo kemach, which could be a bird, or it could be a meal offering, kemoshim before shakosuv, as the Torah says explicitly. Nimtzei salamid, this is what you should know by now for my little speech. Shekol ha'averos shebatorah shayochid mevi al shikigosam chatos kvua shalosh v'arboim heim. That you wouldn't have known that from what he said so far, but he's telling you now that all the mitzvahs in the Torah, upon which you were chayv achatos, are 43. So say vachashov, count them up, as the Rambam does for you in Hilchos Shkagos in the beginning, when he tells you about the laws of a korban chatos, kichein timtzaim, that you'll find, don't worry, you'll find it to be 43, no fewer, no more. The Rubam ba'arayos, obviously the reason you get to such a high number, even though you'd think just a superficial counting, that there aren't so many mitzvos in the Torah for which you're chayiv kares and have all these qualifications, because when you count up all the arayos, the forbidden relationships, you have a lot of different things. You have, sister, aunt, granddaughter, your brother's wife, all these different types of relationships, which are you have to bring a chatos if you accidentally have relations with these people, but there are a lot of them. Yeah, the chayin meinyan zeh mash amru.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, they're but
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You think it's someone else, but it's not. It turns out to be someone that you're not allowed. Yeah, the chayin. Remember, they didn't used to have artificial lighting, so at night you didn't really know who was who. Right, exactly.
That's why you're not supposed to marry somebody with the same name as your mother or your mother-in-law.
Right, that's what's.
They all lived in the same house.
I don't know if that's why. That's also not a real halacha. That the idea that you're not supposed to marry someone with the same name as your mother, or the wife's not to marry someone. It's not supposed to marry a man with the same name as her father. It's also some. Two mechutanim are not supposed to have the same names. Anyway, so
that's a thing.
It's a thing. It's called Tzavos Reb Yehuda HaChosid. It's Reb Yehuda HaChosid, who was the leader of the Pietistic movement in Germany in the 12th century, and he wrote in his will, which some say applies only to his descendants, and not that he was giving a general direction to all of the Jewish people, that he writes these types of things, which are not found in the Gemara anywhere. He writes also that two brothers should not marry two sisters, which is also, we find all over, that's all Maseches Yevamos, that the entire tractate of Yevamos talks about what happens if two brothers marry two sisters and one died. So, I mean, it talks about all over the place. We find all these things. We find great sages who did not fulfill this. So some say that he just thought that his descendants wouldn't do well if they didn't adhere to this these strictures, but there's no certainly no halachic value prevailed. There are communities where they do take this more seriously. They feel that since he said it, so we would do well to listen to it. The Reb Breuer and his brother married two sisters, by the way. But some communities they have issues. When they're checking into a shidduch, that's why. Even on such liberal shidduch things as Why You Connect or Saw You at Sinai, things like that, there's a space where you put your father's Hebrew name if you're a woman, and if you're a man, you put your mother's Hebrew name, so that people who are makbid on this be able to avoid you right away. Rabbi Bleich tells a cute story in his classes on, he's the one who teaches the laws of how to officiate in a marriage, in why and what you should look into in different interesting cases. So he says that there was a chassidish shidduch where of in Rebbe's families and very important families. So they come to, you know, they had one date, so they didn't have so much time. They're supposed to look into you, of course, that's why you only have one date, but somehow they missed this. So they came to the engagement party already, and they realized that the mother of the chassan had the same name as the kala. So they said, but wait a minute, what did they... They said to the mother of the chassid, so what do people actually call you? So she said, Rebbetzin. So they said, oh, mazel tov, it's a shidduch, because they don't... The whole issue is if they actually call you by this name. If you're, let's say...
Yaakov Yosef, and they always call you Yosef.
If they, yeah, if the father's name is Yaakov Yosef, and they call him Yosef, and then the chassid's name is... just Yaakov or something like that, so that's way too far off. But some say it has to be mamish exact, you have to have the exact same, they have to call them the exact same way, or they have to, some say it's not even an issue, even if they have the exact same Hebrew name, if they're called official, you know, Aliyah, Hebrew name that they get called for Aliyah, so it's not a problem. But anyway, it's not an actual halakha in the first place, so as far as my understanding is that in the communities that we know, so they're not so makbid on the tzava of Rebbe Yehuda Chassid, but there are people who are. You're only liable to a chatos if you are shogeg, if you did it accidentally the entire time that you're performing the sin. So let's say you lifted something up in your house to carry it outside on Shabbos, and you didn't know what you were doing. You were shogeg. You said, oh, and you didn't realize it was Shabbos, or you didn't realize that this was a malacha or something. And then you walk outside to the street, and you're about to put the object down, and they realize, oh, wait, today is Shabbos. And then you put it down anyway. That's bezodon. That's doing it on purpose. So in that case, you would not bring a chatos, because that's called shogeg at the beginning, but mazed at the end. It's accidentally at the beginning, on purpose at the end, or it could be, could be a case where it's the opposite, technically, that it has to be shogeg the entire time that you're performing the sin at each stage.
What are you supposed to do besides put it there, whatever?
Because well, if you didn't stop walking yet, then you can just run back and put it back
in. You haven't completed the basically.
So, right. So another option is to let it go in an abnormal manner, so you wouldn't be... And then, again, you're only chayav for hotzah if you pick it up. If you have what's called an akira in the normal manner and a hanacha in the normal manner, so you have to pick it up in the normal manner and put it down. If you didn't pick it up, let's say so you just it fell out of the sky and you know you were walking and then you put it down, so then you're not chayav.
Is that Isakaris or is that Yisrael?
That's Isakaris, sure.
Oh.
If you pick it up in a normal manner b'mezid, and you put it down in a normal manner b'mezid, then you're chayav karis, yeah. And you have this gigantic section of halachos in the Rambam called Hilchos Shogegos, where it talks about exactly what types of things, if you have knowledge at the beginning and not at the end, various types of cases, whether you're chayev to bring a chatas or not. One thing that's called gufim muchlokim, that we normally have, the Minchas Chinuch has a discussion of this, where we normally have a principle that except with malachos of Shabbos, as we learned about a couple weeks ago, that if you were shogeg the whole time, you didn't know what you were doing, you didn't know that it was Shabbos or something, you knew what action you physically were aware of your actions, but let's say you did many different types of malachos on Shabbos, then you would be chayev achatas for each one, even though we normally have a principle that if you do many different averos, if you do the same avera, I'm sorry, here it's Chilul Shabbos. You might think it's the same Avera, violating Shabbos. And so you only have to bring one Chatas if you did many Malachos without realizing it was Shabbos. No, there's a special, the Gzeres HaKosov, the Torah says that we have a different, since it says, Lo Sivar Reish B'chal Moshvech Seichem, it's learned by the fact that it singles out this one Malacha, then the Torah teaches us that you be chayef to bring a separate Chatas for each Malacha that you performed, which is not the case in general. If you did the same category of Isser more than once, while in what we call a Helem Echad, what we call one time frame of being unaware that this was prohibited or whatever, or you didn't know exactly what it was, didn't know that this person was your aunt or whatever it is. So then if you, let's say you have relations with your aunt multiple times, then you would only have to bring one chatas, unless you knew, you realized, oh my gosh, I had relations with my aunt, oh my gosh, I have to bring a chatas, oivei, and then you lapsed again, and you didn't realize, and you did it again, then you have to bring two chatos. But let's say you were in one lapse, then you did the avera multiple times, then even if you did it 500 times, you only have to bring one chatas. But there is a difference if it's what we call gufim muchlokim. If there are different people, then you are liable for each one, even though it's technically the same sin. So let's say you have 10 ants, and you didn't know what you were doing.
You were brought up on a desert island, and then whatever.
Right, exactly. That's one example. If you were literally brought up in a desert island or adopted, and you didn't know they were your ants, 100%. That would be one of the indications of being chayav chatos. But let's say you have 10 ants, and you had relations with all of them with one lapsing period of not realizing that this was prohibited or didn't realize that any of them were your ants, then you would have to bring 10 chatos, even though it was technically the same prohibition, because of what we call gufim muchlakim, different people. Or let's say the Rambam tells us that in even more common case, so let's say you had, let's say your wife didn't go to the mikvah for 3 years, and you had relations however many times, so you have to bring, you only have to bring one chatas, because that's called behelam echad, that you did it within one time period, and it was the same woman. Mm-hmm. But let's say you have three wives, you had relations with all of them, then in the time, even though it was only one lapse of not knowing that this was prohibited or whatever type of lapse it was, and you have to bring three chatos because of three different women, even though it was the same prohibition of nida. But even more than that, let's say you didn't know, again, you were in one lapse, and you had relations with your wife when she was in nida, and then she went to the mikvah. Her nida period ended, and she went to the mikvah, and she became, and then, you know, whatever, next month she became a nida again, and you had relations with her again during that time, then you would also be chayav two chatos, because once she goes to the mikvah, that's considered a guf muchlak. That's a new, this is a new cheftza. The clock starts again. It's a new prohibition of nida. So you would have to go, you would have to bring a chatas for each time after each time, during each period that she was a nida. As opposed to, like I said, if she just didn't go to the mikvah for 3 years and you had, she would, that was considered, even though she had her period many times, but she didn't become, there was no point where she became a nidafied because she never went to the mikvah. So you'd have to, you would only have to bring one chatas for every act of relations that happened during that those 3 years that she didn't go to the mikvah. Okay. Vayesa rubri prateha, many details, mivarim behorios, uchrisos, umakomos mishabbos, certain places in Shabbos, ushuos, uzvachim. Venoeges vizman habayis, vizchar munikevos, it applies to both men and women. Vilver aleha velohikriv chatas, al shigoso, bitelasei, and if you neglected to perform, to bring the korban chatas that you were supposed to bring, then you violated a negative commandment, a positive commandment. Yeah.
There's actually something, once that seems kind of interesting here.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that it's a question of, there's a medrash which says that you're not chayev kares if you're under the age of 20.
Right, that's a whole thing nowadays. When people have their 20th birthday, they have special things that they do, because, right, so you're not, right.
So but you still have to bring a
chatas, yeah.
Chatas, yeah.
Yeah, what does it say?
Relations with your aunt.
No, Chacham Tzvi says, well, whatever. There's a,
but it's not impossible when you're 13. I don't understand. Nothing's impossible. Yeah. I mean, certain things are impossible.
Chacham Tzvi says definitely that, you know, that if you're below the age of 20, you have to bring a chatas.
Yeah.
And in fact, he sort of even questions the very idea that you can't be liable for kares if you're under 20, and so on. So whatever it is, it's saying.
Uh huh. No, that's very interesting. That is indeed very interesting. Okay, so I'll have to read that and report back next time exactly on what different terutzim that people give to that issue. Very good point. Okay, mitzvah kufchav beis 122. Mitzvahs edus, the mitzvah of offering testimony when appropriate. Lahagid ha'edus bifnei hadayonin b'chol ma'at sheneidah ehu. that anything we know, any testimony that we're aware of, we need to say in front of the dayanim, the judges. Whether the person against whom your testimony is directed is going to have to pay money due to your testimony, or is going to be put to death, no matter what the, even if it's a slight slight punishment or a great punishment, it doesn't matter. You still have to give the testimony. Or your testimony, at the opposite, is going to vindicate him. That certainly you have to offer the testimony. That if you are a witness, or you saw, or you knew, if you don't see, then you shall bear your iniquity. In any case that you know to give proper testimony, then you must state the testimony in front of the court. There's a great difference between civil cases and capital cases, or if there are any other case that's criminal. You don't have to go to the court and volunteer your testimony. You have to be summoned by one of the litigants or by the court itself to offer testimony. You don't have to go of your own accord. But for capital cases or different criminal cases, you saw someone violating a prohibition. If you saw a murder take place, that if you saw someone smiting his friend, in which case, in certain cases, he's going to be chayev malchus as well. He's going to be lashed by the court. So then you have to come and volunteer your testimony of your own accord. Because it's your duty to make sure the punishments are properly administered, so that we shouldn't have bad people going around in the Jewish community anymore.
So we're all mandated reporters, right?
I guess you can call it that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. See something, say
something. And again, prevent people from sinning, either because the guy knows that he's going to be punished in the court, or the other people will see that these people are being properly punished by the Jewish court, so therefore they will refrain from performing sins. Mishorshei HaMitzvah, Lefi sheyesh b'mitzvah zot toelas gedol ivnei adam. Obviously, this is extremely important for society. Ein tzorech laharich b'em. I don't need to go on and tell you how important this is. Ki yaduim advarim l'chol roei hashemesh. Anybody who can see the sun can see how important it is to offer testimony where testimony is called for, to make sure the judicial system functions properly and by extension, society itself. Dinei hamitzvah d'alacha. So the mitzvah kigon hachilukim shegilu anu chachom zichronim l'vracha sheva mitzvah zo ben ish l'ish. So there are differences between different types of people in the performance of this mitzvah. Shelo kol adam chayev lavo lifnei bezdim l'hoi l'hem. It's not an absolute rule that everyone needs to come to the court and offer testimony. Shim haya ha'ed chacham gadol ve'abezdin pachos mimenu. So let's say there's a huge rabbi and he knows testimony for a certain court case. But the court case is being tried. But the court case is being tried by a bezdin of ill repute in, let's say, one of these places in. Okay, I don't want to give specific examples, but there's certain neighborhoods which are known to have batedin, which are not very organized, which are the people are out for their own financial gain, and they're very unscrupulous, then, or even if it's just being done by, you know, there's this huge rabbi, what do you mean? There's this huge rabbi who's going to appear as a witness in front of a panel of, let's say, three college students who are forming a bezdin of their own accord. It's ridiculous. He doesn't have to go. There are two principles at work here. One is the principle of having to give testimony, and the other is the principle of kavod haTorah, of the honor due to the Torah. So they're both important principles in the Torah. So one trumps the other, and it's not in the direction of the Eidos trumping. Yeah.
If Gadol Hador witnesses a murder...
One second. Okay. Yes, excellent question. So this of Blinchas Chinuch points out that this applies only to civil cases.
Yeah, okay.
But if there's a criminal case, then of course, no matter what, whoever knows the testimony has to go and offer the testimony. That if the Godel wants, then he can not go and give the testimony because it's not appropriate for his honor. And this is actually a disagreement. It sounds here like the Chinuch says, it's just up to him, whatever he feels like, whatever he's in the mood for. If he thinks, if he doesn't want to go, then he doesn't have to go. However, the Rush, the Minchas Chinuch quotes the Rush, who says that it's inappropriate. In fact, the Chacham should not go because of the is a bizarre to the Kavod HaTorah. It is a lack of honor for the Torah, and it's therefore it's not really up completely up to the Gadol's discretion. In normal circumstances, we would assume he should not go to offer testimony. That the obligation to give honor to the Torah sets aside the obligation for this person to give testimony. The Chen Kohen Gadol, same thing with the High Priest. But he only has to testify in a case which is where in which the king is one of the litigants. And the kings of Yisrael, again, and not this was the other kingdom, not the one that was where we Jews are the descendants of the people from the other kingdom. But Malchus Yisrael was the northern part. The name is taken from Malchus Yisrael, which is the, I guess, what we view as the less religious kingdom, the northern kingdom. But it was applied also to any king of the Jewish people who was not from the official Davidic line, who are supposed to be the kings of Israel. So you have all these cases of like the Hasmonean dynasty. So the Hasmonean dynasty were called Malchi Yisrael because they didn't have officially the full halachic status of proper Jewish kings, even though the government. It wasn't that they, it's that, they ran the government and, for some, I guess some of them were okay, but in general, they just don't have the full status of proper kings. So, those types of kings don't testify and people don't testify about them, Mishum Maisa Shahaya, because there was a certain case that proved that this should not be the case. The sages decreed that this should be the case. The Gemara tells us in Masechah Sanhedrin that there was a case where the slave of Yanai HaMelech, who was a Hasmonean king, he killed someone, and the sages, Shimon ben Shetach, who was the major sage back then, said, no, who cares that he's the slave of the king? We're going to try this case according to the Halacha and the Torah, and that's the end of that. So he gathered all the sages together, and he insisted that Yanai HaMelech had to come because the slave was technically the property of the king. So when people's property is going to be damaged, or people have a court case involving their property, then they have to be present. So the king had to be present during the trial of his slave who was accused of murder. So the king was rather displeased with the idea that his slave was, he was going to lose a slave. Again, it's cost a lot of money, and you guess maybe it was a good slave, and he was very good at performing all the services that the king required of him. So the king said, "All right, who's going to convict my slave?" It says in the courtroom. He looked to the right at all the judges who were to his right, and the judges. It says, "Kavshu paneihem bakarka." They sort of put their heads down, like, "Not us. We're not going to say anything." Mm-hmm. Then he looked to the left, and they said, they said, who's gonna convict my slave? Not us. Put their heads in the ground. Kavshu paneihem bakarka. Therefore, since the presence of the king there as a witness was messed with the judicial procedures as required by the Torah, because everybody was afraid that they were going to do something to displease him. So from that point, the sages decreed that these types of kings should not be witnesses, should not be called as witnesses, and nobody should testify against them.
But whether or not the king is there, if they ended up convicting the guy, they still...
Yeah, I think since he was there, it was more
obvious.
Yeah. And then also he could see which of the judges was voting in which manner.
Knowledge of how the vote went?
No, it's not supposed to be a public knowledge, actually.
It works both ways.
Right, so it was considered to be a major attack on religion and the proper procedures of the Torah,
yes.
So therefore the sages felt that it was better that they should just simply, we should remove them from the entire parsha of testimony. Aval continues the Sefer Chinuch, Malchei Beis David, the real proper Jewish kings from the house of David, Me'idin, U'me'idim Aleihem. They can offer testimony, and we testify against them, V'don in Osam, and we can judge them in Bezdin, the assumption being that the full proper Jewish kings from the house of David are more religious, and they will accept upon themselves the proper, again, people have Negias, but we assume that people, the kings of the Davidic line, are extra religious, so they're going to accept upon themselves the judgment, no matter how it goes. Even if it's against them, they're going to say justice was done according to the system of the Torah. That's the way a proper leader is supposed to be, as opposed to people leaders who are trying to or conniving and trying to move everything in their direction of their favor. Ve'ein nimnoim milakabel edus bishvil ahava v'sina. Let's say there's a court case, and one of the witnesses called is the best friend of one of the litigants, or is a sworn enemy of one of the litigants, so we still accept their testimony, kisheris Yisrael lo yasu avla beidusam, that people are not going to do an avla, a terrible thing, in their testimony. We assume that even though they are friends with the enemies of one of the litigants, then they're not going to say an all-out lie. They're going to, maybe they'll, I mean, they shouldn't do this, but, okay, I was going to say maybe they'll omit things, but perhaps we assume they won't even do that. But they're certainly not going to say an all-out lie just because they have certain feelings for one of the litigants. Avol inyan hadin eino kein. But a friend or an enemy may not serve as a judge as opposed to a witness. Why? She'ein donin ha'oedah sonei. It's not a matter of all a direct lie or not, or telling the truth or bending the truth. It's just a matter of you're hearing arguments in someone, different perspectives, different arguments in someone's favor or against a certain person. So if you're friends with a person, so you're not going to pay as much attention to the arguments against. And if you really don't like the person, so you're not going to pay attention to the arguments in favor. You're going to say, oh no, probably the arguments in against him make more sense. Just a matter of choosing between two sides of the story as opposed to a all-in-out lie.
As a practical matter, if you're going to exclude the testimony of anybody who was intimately knew, one of the parties, then that's getting rid of a lot of witnesses. You know, I mean, it's just like, right. Just like they say in a criminal trial, they say, you know, that. You know, the witnesses may be themselves criminals. Well, yes, Wells hangs out with criminals. You know?
Yeah, but that's different. That's a real, right. But if they're a real criminal, then they're pusillatus for other reasons.
Oh.
We learned weeks ago that somebody who commits crimes and is known to be a criminal is certainly not pusillatus, but it just... But you're right, they might be hanging out more with their friends, maybe not so much with their enemies, so you have to accept the testimony of friends if the system is going...
Even if they're giving alibis, false alibis and stuff?
No. Well, that's the point. It was the question then carefully, but Kisheris Yisrael lo yasu avla.
Both.
Both. The Chosav HaRambam, Zichron HaLevracha, the Rambam tells us, She'ikar edu shel Torah hu mipi ha'edim v'lo mipi ksovam. On a deraisa level, there is no testimony except testimony that you, the judges, actually hear verbally from the witnesses. Shenemar al pi. Pi shnayim edim. On the mouth, literally, or according to two witnesses. Ela shechachamim ibnei tikun ha'olam she'yimtsu b'nei adam lilvos. So the sages saw that this would be impossible in terms of borrowing money from each other. When people borrow money from each other, to have two witnesses to come verbally tell the court that he saw this person borrow money, and there'd be so much confusion. And then when you pay back the money, then you'd have to get two more witnesses, and it would be crazy. Tiknu shenachtoch adin b'mamon al piedim shebishtar kimo mipihem. So the chachomim, the sages, made a decree that we accept the testimony of witnesses who are signed on a document. Just as we would accept the Eidos, their Eidos actually verbally. The Ramban, Zichron al-Varacha, Nachmanides, in his disagreements with the Rambam on the Sefer HaMitzos, Hiksha Allah b'Sefer HaMitzos, Harbe Alze, V'yarich Ha'inyan in Basi Lichtov Kulo, he asks a lot of questions on the Rambam, and I like to keep my Sefer HaChinuch short, at least when I'm not in the mood to go on a long dissertation about such things as the building of the temple. I don't want to repeat all their arguments to each other, but klol shel klol hadavar, the upshot is, ki ha-Ramban zechron al-Vracha sover she'edus shtar del-raisahu. Rambam says no, that the Ramban says no, that's not correct, that a document is valid testimony on a biblical level even. Dichsiv uchsov b'sefer v'chasom. Again, it's a little strange because it's a pasuk from Nach. Normally, we don't learn out Doraisa halachos from Sukkim and Nach, although sometimes I guess we do. He considers, since it says written on a book and signed, so since it says that in Nach, so we assume that a document is considered valid testimony on a Doraisa level even. Umidine ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah are as follows. Gamkein ma-shamer zichronim levracha, shekol adam shehigid eduso bifnei bezdin, v'chakaruhu kirtzonam, ein yachol lachzor v'listor davar mikol ma-shigid bifneiem, v'lomar shemuto shogeg haya. Once your testimony is investigated by the court, according to how whatever the court feels is the proper procedures for investigating you, and is satisfied that you are telling the truth, then once they've accepted your testimony on that level, then you may no longer retract. Or you can't say, oh, I misremembered. Even if you gave an excuse, then we don't listen to you. And a testimony that's in a document is considered, that principle as that when witnesses are signed on a document, that it's as if their testimony was already accepted by the court, and they cannot say, oh, we made a mistake when we signed the document and we didn't really mean it, or we made a mistake, etc. Anything that's written in that document is considered full-fledged testimony, and the witnesses cannot retract it. V'donin al pi ha-chasum in v'chol davar ha-kosa b'shtar, v'ushani ha-briyim shosam ha-chasum v'hem she-chasamu oso ha-shtar v'lo ziyefa mizayif. So, this principle that we just said, that two witnesses are considered as if they were already two witnesses signed on a document as if they were already investigated in a court, that's only if we know for sure that these two signatures are authentic and this document is authentic. And the way we do this principle thing, which we call kiyum shtaros, which we call when a bezdin of three officially signs off on a document that they investigated the signatures and they were found to be authentic. So you have to, bezdin has to find two people who recognize the two signatures. You need two witnesses to come to the court and say, yes, this is the signature of so-and-so, and the other one is the signature of so-and-so. And on that basis, the Bezdin can, does what we call a kiyum, and they write on the bottom, underneath the two signatures, but most of we were at Bezdin, we're sitting three as one, and we determined that these signatures are authentic, and once the Bezdin signs on that, that's what we call the shtar mekuyam. Let's say two out of the three judges recognize the signatures, and the other judge on the court doesn't recognize the signatures, so of course he relies on it. There don't have to be two separate witnesses from the court. The third judge can rely on the testimony of the two other judges, and that's sufficient for it to do a kiyum as well. If the witnesses themselves are present and they say, yes, this is my signature, and yes, that's my signature, but one of the witnesses says, can't say, oh yes, that's my signature, and that's the other guy's signature, we're both there and we signed the document. It has to be either both of them, or two witnesses, or two of the three judges. If you have another example of this person's signature which is authentic beyond a doubt, then you also can, if you compare the two signatures, you can also perform kiyum shtaros based on that. So it can't just be that you have one other example of their signatures on a document, but rather it has to be two different documents that relate to two different fields that the new owners of the field, after it was transferred ownership based on this document, they ate the produce of the field for 3 years in a public manner, and they didn't is in a manner that would suggest that they didn't at all expect that the old owners of the field would come and say, no, the document is forged. It had to be 3 years of this document being everybody assuming that, oh, of course, this document's fine. Like, nobody's going to have any issues based with this document. From two ksubis, you could all, that where the people are signed on, you could also make kiyum shtaros. You have to, Bezdin has to find a different source for these two ksubis, or these two documents relating to a field, and not that they were presented to the court by none other than the person who is now requesting the court to perform kiyum shtaros on this document. Maybe he forged everything. Maybe he forged this document that he wants them to be Mekayim, to authenticate. And maybe he forged the documents that are to be the proof that, that the, based on which the Bezdin is going to authenticate the new document. You could also perform Kiyum Shtaris if there was another document that had a history of people questioning its validity, and after thorough investigation was found by a different Bezdin to be authentic, then in that case you could make Kiyum Shtaros, you could authenticate this new document based on the signatures that you see in the old document that you see went through a rigorous authentication procedure already. This happens, by the way. People, Bezdinim nowadays, we still do Kiyum Shtaros. It's funny the first time I saw this, because this is just something, you know, concept you think when you learn Gemara, and you're like, oh yeah, they used to do that, they had these documents, you know, that they perform Yom Shtar or something. You don't realize that it's the first time you see it actually done.
What sort of case would you be?
Any document you can perform Yom Shtar or something. Most of the times when I see it is when there is a, what we call a harsha'a, which is a document attesting to the fact that a get was done properly, mm-hmm. and the get is going to be sent somewhere else to be delivered. Mm-hmm. So you have the two witnesses sign the document saying, yes, we were witnesses on this get, and everything was done properly, mm-hmm. and just needs to be sent to another place for it to be delivered. And then you have a Bezdin sign on the bottom saying that we a Bezdin, are yes, we saw this, and this, these signatures are authentic, and everything is done okay. Umash Amru Zichronim Livracha Gamkein Shebeidu Shel Chasima Nemon Korov Lahoid Alksivas Krovo Shehu Makira. And since this institution of Kiyum Shtaros is only the Rabbanan, so the person testifying as to the authenticity of the signatures on this document could be even someone who is a relative of the signatory on the document. Even though normal cases of testimony, so we know that close relatives are not permitted to testify for each other. So if the relative and someone else are there, then they can authenticate the document. And also it's an unusual case where normally someone over bar mitzvah is not believed to give official testimony on something that he saw before his bar mitzvah. The witnessing has to be done when the person is an official halachic adult. But in this case, the rabbis, since again the whole institution is rabbinic, so the rabbis were lenient and decided that you could believe someone who post bar mitzvah regarding something that he saw before bar mitzvah. Is maybe his father died, you know, when he was very young, but he said, yeah, I remember when I was little, I clearly know that this is my father's signature. I saw it many times, so that then he is believed. Umash Amros Sha'asara Brios Psulos Leidos Minatorah. There are 10 types of people who are Pasul Eidos on a Daraisa level, on a biblical level, and we discussed that previously. When we talking about how you're not supposed to be a witness, you're not supposed to act as a witness if the other person in the who's going to testify with you is someone who's not an appropriate witness, even if the Bezdin doesn't know that. If you know that, you're not allowed to be a witness. So there we had a lengthy discussion about exactly the types of psulim, midaraisa, if he performs sins, or he's a close relative, or anything like that. Yeah? What? But if you know that the din is going to be, let's say Yitzchak and Shlomo saw a thing, and Shlomo is Machal Shabbos, doesn't count as a witness. So Yitzchak is not allowed to go to the court and testify with Shlomo because the court is going doesn't know that Shlomo is Mechal Shabbos, and the court is going to render a decision based on the testimony of Yitzchak and Shlomo together. Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. Because you're a single witness.
Then Shlomo's.
Yeah, sure. Oh, and this for this mitzvah as well, of course, I forgot to mention that the Minchas Chinuch points out as well that if you are a single witness to something and you know that your testimony is going to be meaningless because the court is not going to accept your testimony anyway, that you don't have to go. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go testify, mm-hmm. but there are situations where your testimony is going to be valid. A single witness, such as testifying that a woman's husband died and that she can now remarry, mm-hmm. If there's certain cases where the testimony of one witness requires one of the litigants to take an oath, then the one witness's testimony does have, even though it's not of the final word, it does have some halachic point to it. So therefore, you would be, this mitzvah that we're discussing now would be applicable to you, that you would be required to go testify. V'chein mi she'eino b'mikra v'lo b'mishna v'lo b'derech eretz who pasul midivrehem. Somebody who doesn't know, he doesn't act properly, and he doesn't even know a little bit of Tanakh, and he doesn't know a little bit of Mishnah, then he's pasul edus midirabanan. Midaraisa, he'd only be pasul edus if he actually performed sins. But he is assumed to not be, not be in the parish of edus if he's so ignorant that he doesn't even know a little Tanakh and a little Mishnah. Shechazaka alav shehu rasha, that the Chazal assumed that this person could not perform the mitzvahs properly if he doesn't know what's going on, and he's going to do a lot of sins. Varei ksiv altashes rasha aid. You shouldn't make a wicked person to be a witness. V'aim yeshua derech eretz v'osik tzas v'mitzvahs shemekabel neidu. So if he basically acts properly, and he learns, he learns a little bit each day. But if he has a little bit of, he learns one Mishnah a day, he learns the Parsha a little bit with Rashi, then even though he doesn't know, he really doesn't remember things, he doesn't know things, he remains an Amoritz, then he's still an acceptable witness. Because he's at least making a little bit of an effort. You see, he's at least shayach to the Parsha of learning and trying to be a good Jew. Any Torah scholar is considered to be a valid witness until he's known to be an invalid witness. That's part of the... because we're running out of time. And somebody who's an ignoramus is considered to be puzzle until he is... he's proved himself to be good. That people who are completely denigrate themselves and don't act properly, they are a puzzle on a derabanan level. If you eat in the marketplace, bifnei hakol, we discussed before the specifics of that. That if you walk naked in the marketplace, it doesn't necessarily mean completely naked, but let's say, for example, I don't think, today t-shirt and shorts is unacceptable in the eyes of many. I'm not saying I'm not saying people should walk with a t-shirt and shorts in the marketplace, but I'm saying if you did walk with a t-shirt and shorts in the marketplace, then it would not be, you would not be puzzled because that's considered in the eyes of many an acceptable way to walk in the marketplace. I would say, for example, the example of this would be of, let's say there's a man whose work is a construction worker or something is very hot, and he doesn't wear a shirt while he's working. Mm-hmm. So then, let's say he wants to walk home, let's say his home is a 15-minute walk away, he doesn't bother to put on a shirt while he's walking outside on his way home. And that would be an example of this, that walking a room in Bashuk in a manner that's really considered to be, people really would look askance of that, even if walking that way in a public place. Yeah, if you're at the beach, if that's fine. But if you're a separate beach, of course. If you're at the beach, then it's fine to wear just a bathing suit or whatever. But if you walk home, if you walk home with just a bathing suit, then that might be a different story. Okay. Umiklal habzuyim haochlim tzedaka shel goyim befarhesya. That non-Jewish charity money, if you publicly take it and you use that money and say you have no problem whatsoever accepting non-Jewish charity money, that's also considered to be bazui.
What?
Yes, yeah.
So Suppose, God forbid, you're really in a bad state, and some nice, probably obviously not Jewish person gives you $5, and you allowed to spend it.
Publicly accept charity from idolaters.
Idolaters, censorship. Yeah, okay.
Displays lack of dignity and gives a false impression that Jews are not merciful enough to provide for one another.
Good. V'yeser prateha b'varim b'sanhedrin u'shavuos. And the rest of the details are in Sanhedrin Shvuos. V'heges b'chol makom v'chol zman b'zcharim aval lo b'nashim. Again, this is by for males and not for females. Shein anashim b'toras edus l'kalos daitan. Okay. it said that women are not acceptable witnesses because they are not as serious as we'd like witnesses to be.
They have other precious uses of their time.
That's not what it means, but if you want to...
So we have other precious uses of our time. Like, a Talmud Chacham doesn't have to go because he is busy.
Okay, that's a little revisionistic, but if you wanna interpret it like that, that's fine. No, but the women, in a case where a woman... it's actually machlokes whether women are completely not in the parsha of Eidos at all, that they never violate this mitzvah, or in a case where a woman's testimony would be accepted, again, if, let's say, someone's husband died, and a woman is going to testify that the person died and her testimony would be accepted, or in certain cases where her testimony is accepted, like they need to know whether this piece of meat is kosher or not, then is according to some, then she would violate this mitzvah. But it sounds a little bit like here, from here, that she was, she's completely not in the.
You're accepting.
Also, if in a civil case, if the litigants accept a woman's testimony, then you could accept a woman's testimony. But in cases where officially halachically you need a hagadas edus, like in a capital case or any criminal case, then you do not accept a woman's testimony. I didn't make the rules. The over aleha velo heyid bedine mominis keshet tva'uhu leedos baal davar obezdin. And if you didn't say your testimony in a civil case when the litigants or the Bezdin demanded your testimony, subpoenaed your testimony, O bedine nefashis, umakes bisurin shel Torah me'atzmo, if you didn't come forward by yourself in a criminal case, pital aseivan shel gadol me'od, you violated to perform a positive commandment and your punishment is very great, ki bekoach ha'edus yiskaimu ha'yishuvim. You need testimony in order for our society to function properly. It says a different language than the way it usually says by mitzvahs in the Torah, that if you don't say your testimony, then you shall bear your iniquity. Sounds more severe than normally, than just you shouldn't do this. If it was in a civil case and you neglected to provide testimony and you swore that you didn't know testimony for this, that's one of the circumstances and you have to bring a chatos that changes value. With a certain conditions, as it says in Masecha Shuas, that's one of the korbanos, few korbanos, which are brought whether you did the sin on purpose or unwittingly.